Hello, everyone. Welcome to Flock Talk. I'm Erin Morgan.
And I'm Stacey Sage, and we work for the members of the Ontario Sheep Farmers. Today, we are pleased to introduce Christoph Wand, Livestock Sustainability Specialist with the Ontario Ministry of Agriculture, Food, and Agribusiness. Christoph has a strong background in agricultural science, having earned his Bachelor of Science in Nutritional Sciences and Master of Science in Animal Science from the University of Guelph. Since joining OMAFA in 1998, Christoph has played a key role in advancing environmental sustainability within the livestock sector. His work includes contributions to the Environmental Farm Plan and various funding and policy programs. Christoph's expertise in nutrition, economic sustainability, and greenhouse gas mitigation has been recognized through his participation in national and industry-led committees. In addition to his role at OMAFA, Christoph serves as an adjunct professor at University of Guelph, where he supports agroecology education. He has authored numerous fact sheets and articles reflecting his commitment to the health and well-being of livestock. We look forward to hearing Christoph's insights and learning more about his contributions to livestock sustainability in Ontario. Welcome to Flock Talk, Christoph. Let's get started.
Hey, Christoph, welcome to Flock Talk.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here, Erin and Stacey.
Yes,
that was quite the introduction. Yes. You are very accomplished, so we look forward to all you have to say today. So, given the often ambiguous nature of sustainability, can you tell us what sustainability means from your perspective?
Yeah, it is kind of a thing at times, a little nebulous, very ambiguous. And I like going back to the classic definition of it being that convergence of the economic, the environmental, and the social aspects of sustainability. When we're in a room together, I like putting it up as a Venn diagram for people. The other thing I would say is a good expression of it is the idea of continuous improvement. Just last week, I sat in a meeting again where the question was asked, you know, will we ever be sustainable? And that's a bit of a philosophical question. The answer is no, because it is this journey of continuous improvement. So those are two different ways that I look at it.
Yeah, especially since, like, you could also philosophically say, if we are still here and still farming, you get to sort of partially say yes, I think, but.
Yeah, and it is the journey, right? At some level, it is the journey.
Yeah, and those goalposts are constantly changing and shifting too.
Yep.
So what are some of the biggest challenges sheep producers face in adopting sustainable practices, and how can they overcome these obstacles right now?
I think the biggest challenge, and I've said to OSF staff in the past, that, you know, the sheep industry could hide in the shadow of the dairy industry and the beef industry, in terms of the expectations of processors, consumers, the value chain, and what's being asked of them. And the reason I say sheep people could hide in that is just because the momentum is around those things, and many of our challenges are similar, right? It's a ruminant animal we deal with in the sheep industry. So, you know, we can look to the beef industry or the dairy industry and see some of those things that we might want to work on. But the biggest challenge is that we don't really have a partner further down in the value chain to help us do those things. So if you look at the motivation, whether you look at ProAction in the dairy industry or the Roundtable for Sustainable Beef in the beef industry, and even some of the things the Ontario Corn-Fed Beef Program is doing on the beef side, they have motivations from the value chain to help them. But I don't think we've seen that in the sheep industry yet. You know, other than things like, say, the campaign for wool, you really don't see an initiative coming to the sheep industry and saying, hey, let's do this thing together that allows, you know, sheep producers and your organization to embrace the challenge and move forward and make improvements to the vision of the value chain.
So if we were to look at, you know, making an improvement in as a sheep industry, you know, is there low hanging fruit? Are there some practices that sheep producers should be looking at, that our organization should be potentially looking at to implement to reduce our environmental footprint or be more sustainable as a sector?
And to those, again, if you wanted to make changes, I think we would look to the things the dairy industry has done. And, you know, they have a research budget and could do things, and the beef industry has done, and they have a research budget and can do things. And some of those classical things around manure management, reduction of methane production on farm. So basically, you know, efficient use of resources on the farm. Those would be environmentally the things I would look to in sheep. I think what is unique in livestock work compared to, say, horticulture or field crops is clearly this intersection around social expectations and animal welfare. So, you know, on the social front, I would say, you know, clearly, you know, the continued commitment to animal welfare in the sheep industry would be where you'd want to be as well.
Excellent.
So continuing on that and touching on nutrition, what would you say nutrition management plays in sustainable sheep farming, and how can producers optimize feed efficiency to reduce their waste?
So obviously you're going to get the bias of a person who spent a lot of time doing nutrition work. You know, we look at whether it's from a cost perspective or if you look at any of the footprinting work, including OSF's own footprinting work that it has done, mm-hmm. we know that feeds and the, you know, the growing of feeds, the using of feeds, the manure that comes out the other end of the animal is the biggest part of both the financial and the environmental footprint of livestock species in general. So the ability to use feeds effectively, efficiently, you know, having diets that are formulated properly so we're not, you know, using excess protein when we don't need it, right? Excess protein means excess nitrogen, whether it's in the manure or in the feed crop system coming up to it. And nitrogen has pretty significant consequences environmentally. So that's one thing we want to do. We don't want to be willy-nilly about protein usage, and we want to be effective with energy usage too, right? Which in the sheep is going to be either starch in the form of grains or fiber in the form of your forages. So the effective use of those reduces your footprint all along, you know, whether on the cropping system coming into the animal again, in the barn, or in the resulting manure going out. Like, that's the easiest way to bring the footprint of all that down is effective use of those nutrients and those feedstuffs all the way through. Mm-hmm. It is that simple at some level, right? Mm-hmm. Proper diet formulation, proper feed provision to make that work well.
Yeah, well, and at the end of the day, managing those things are also good business, right? So, yep. You know, it's not like you're going out of your way to do something for the environment that doesn't also benefit.
Yeah, and some of the subtleties, you know, where you get beyond that is things like covering manure storages, timing of manure usage. You know, there are periods of time where, you know, protein feedstuffs are cheap. Like, we've gone through periods of time where distiller's grain was as cheap or cheaper than corn. Mm-hmm. And so we saw a lot of that going into livestock diets in general, not just sheep. But there was times where we were feeding excesses of protein to those animals. And, you know, so there comes this little bit of tension that sometimes when we have a cheap feedstuff, if we're looking at it strictly from, you know, a nitrogen or a greenhouse gas perspective, there was times where, you know, adding more distiller's grains to the diet might not have been the right thing to do. So those are subtle examples where it changes. But yeah, on the whole, if we're managing money and feed resources, the feed pile properly and the manure pile properly, then we're getting a long way towards those goals.
Amazing. And then on the social side of sustainability, so how important is community collaboration to achieve sustainability goals? And what role can sheep producers play in fostering a more sustainable agricultural community?
So that's, you know, this comes back to this area where I see that there's a bit of a liability. Let me restate that. This is an area where I see that there's a weakness for the sheep industry. Because in all these other commodities that you see this work going forward, and it doesn't matter whether you're talking about palm oil or soy or beef, we tend to see this roundtable approach, mm-hmm. right? Where farmers in those commodities and their producer groups and processors and retailers and environmental groups, you know, people like Ducks Unlimited or the Nature Conservancy, you know, sit around in a roundtable format. And they discuss the issues and things they want to work on. I'll give you the beef industry example, you know, preserving wildlife habitat on pasture lands, right? So there's a synergy between what the beef industry wants to do and what our friends in, say, Ducks Unlimited want to do. I don't see that we have that, though, in the sheep industry yet. We haven't really had any of those groups, processor, retailer, nature groups, come to the sheep industry and say, you know, at large, we see this opportunity, let's all get in a room together and start figuring out ways that sheep farmers and our interests align. And so that roundtable approach, which I think very well of, and it's worked in a bunch of different sustainability programs, if I can call them that, across different commodities, is what's missing for us. Mm-hmm. We need someone else that's willing to come and say, you know, here are the environmental goods and services we look to the sheep industry for. Let's do something together, right? That's what we still need. How much of that is the obligation of sheep farmers to generate, like to build that process? I don't know. But when the process comes, then definitely the obligation will be there to partner with them when that happens. So that's, you know, it's a bit of a chicken and egg thing. And I don't see both of those things quite in play yet for the sheep sector.
Are those roundtables provincial, or are they federal in nature? Just because
they are industry led. So the roundtable for sustainable beef really came out of, you know, its genesis was when McDonald's internationally said we want to do things, and McDonald's looked at the Canadian beef industry and said because of the way our supply chain works in Canada, that Canada would be a fantastic model for their global ambitions around sustainability. And that's what started the roundtable for sustainable beef about 10 years ago. Very quickly, other players came in. So it's not just a McDonald's thing. And at this point in time, you know, McDonald's would be very modest, but you know, that was sort of the spark at that time was McDonald's and what's now the Canadian Cattle Association saying we need to do something. And this board was formed. It has its own governance structure. They have their own elections. In fact, their AGM will be in Toronto this fall in September. And that might even be something that sheep producers might want to be observers at to see what happens.
I'm super interested in how that all goes. So yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah. And back to the question, Aaron, about, you know, who spawns these, there are other roundtables, right? Like there was the value chain roundtables that the federal government, the FedProv roundtables that were established during the BSE years. Mm-hmm. There's a sheep one as well, but that is really a federal provincial industry discussion. Whereas these sustainability roundtables kind of have taken on a life of their own.
That's really cool. Thank you.
Interesting. Yeah, for sure. Lots of opportunity. And if there's any interested listeners out there who want to get in touch about this, please do. Mm-hmm. So kind of touching on your work at the university, what role do you see education and innovation playing in promoting sustainable practices among sheep farmers?
Oh, wow. What role does education play in that? I think it is the foundation of it all. Right. Mm-hmm. People need to be aware of each the opportunities and the challenges to be able to work on them. So, and it's not just, you know, producer education, it's for the whole value chain or the whole supply chain again. And that's where these roundtables become intriguing methods to do that. You know, sometimes a processor or a retailer is aware of something happening in another hotspot, right? So a hotspot in our work, you know, is something like Amazon deforestation. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this has happened a number of times where a retailer processor comes forward and says, hey, we need your industry, whoever it is, to be looking out for this thing that's a problem. And sometimes we, in our context, are already doing those things. Okay. So I'll give you an example, something like, say, progress towards no-till in feed production systems. So sometimes, you know, a retailer processor will say, hey, we need to make sure you're doing your thing on soil health. And only to realize that we're already doing those things. So sometimes that dialogue needs to happen. Sometimes the low-hanging fruit is just demonstrating the win has already been won.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a whole continuation or a whole continuum rather of education that needs to happen, you know, with people that are students that are about to go into their career, and then people all the way through, and then people on the other side of this coin too. Right. In terms of, again, those people wanting our product, whatever it might be, to be in dialogue about what's really happening and what really needs to change as opposed to what they perceive needs improvement.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, as we talk about the future and the future of sustainability, you know, I'm working as part of the Ontario Sheep's part of the larger Living Lab. And I noticed that the dairy farmers are really interested in methane and manure management. So those are sort of the two big things in the Living Lab that I noticed. But, you know, are there other things that you see in other parts of the world or, you know, that people are starting to talk about that could be sort of the future of sustainability? Is there, are you sort of seeing winds of change or new things coming down the pike that we should be aware of?
I don't think in sustainability that there's really new things. Like, I don't think, you know, things come out and surprise us. I think things move incrementally towards the foreground. That's kind of the nature of this work. But what I do see, you can look for other places for inspiration in terms of where that momentum is going, right? Mm-hmm. So, for example, the National Sheep Association in the UK, you know, they have a fairly robust document about their sustainability agenda, right? Not only what they hope to do themselves, but things they'd like to offer their society in terms of, you know, quick wins, improvements that the sheep industry can achieve for them. And we see some of that in New Zealand and Australia as well, you know, that dialogue has started. So if we were looking somewhere to for a trajectory, if we don't want to just look at the dairy and the beef trajectory here, then some of those other jurisdictional ones like NSA and in the happenings in New Zealand and Australia. So,
this document, you know, that I have right here on my desk.
Yeah, so that one exactly, and the one that I have here, the UK sheep farming and sustainability agenda. So it's available online, and people can look at that too to give them a sense of, you know, in a society, I would say our society is a little bit more like, you know, European society than it is Australia, New Zealand in terms, you know, tight population farming relationship. But mm-hmm. I think that's worth looking at.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I would like to go back and unpack Aaron's observation that our friends in the dairy industry and the living labs are very interested in these questions around greenhouse gases. And I think manure, you said, yes?
Yeah. Manure and methane. Those are the big...
Manure, methane. And this comes back to that the dairy industry has set themselves this net zero 2050 goal, right?
Oh, yeah. And we were approached about a plastics... like recycling, or what are we going to do with all the plastics? And yep. That was something that came out of the dairy example as well.
And I have in my schedule next week a conversation on exactly this thing, you know, another view towards a pilot or some other program around silage wrap plastics, right? Like plastics is a problem.
Yes.
And so let's just unpack the dairy thing a little bit. So the dairy industry, because of the challenges around climate change, greenhouse gas, set this net zero 2050 goal. And when you speak to the leaders who worked on that, they will tell you straight up, we don't really know how we're going to do this. We know the levers include manure and rumen methane and biodigesters and all these things. So they have a sense of what it'll be and that they'll have to be doing a lot more, you know, cover cropping and, you know, keeping land covered and carbon sequestration. But they have accepted this, the leadership at least. And, you know, there's still some perhaps wait and see, you know, show me amongst producers. But they see this as a generational goal. Mm-hmm. Right. Or an industry challenge. And it's kind of like, you know, in the 60s, putting, you know, an astronaut on the moon. Mm-hmm. And the perspective on that is that even if we don't know what all the parts are going to be, if we don't know all the math to get to it, this is our commitment. This is what we're going to do. So back to the living labs, you see all this momentum and interest in doing those things that we all intuitively know support that. But now that goal has been set, right? So that provides the momentum and their interest towards all those things. So they're all in, right? In terms of their research and industry development agenda towards those things. Mm-hmm. And then again, to the dairy industry, and this would be way tougher in the sheep industry because of the nature of our manure, right? If you look at a dairy barn, and typically today, you know, it's a semi-solid manure that can be collected fairly easily. This whole idea of biodigesters, which technically could have merit in the sheep industry too. It's just we have this challenge about the physical nature of sheep manure relative to dairy manure. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think the trajectory they're on demonstrates itself in terms of how they're behaving with their projects.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely an opportunity to watch what they're doing and to adopt the practices that make the most sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's going to be some of these biodigesters our dairy friends are looking at are going to have this model where they have, you know, this modular aspect where it's not just about scraping semi-solid manure from dairy barns. They're designing these things to take pack manure from, you know, beef, cow-calf operations and could from a sheep operation too, right? That will, you know, kind of having a system you can macerate it to go into a biodigester will allow that to happen for even for the sheep industry if we really wanted.
Yep. So, Christoph, you know, you work with the Ontario government. And so the obvious question is, where is the government seeing the future of sustainability? Where does the government want us to go? And are there programs in place? Are there, you know, is there some guidance the government is giving us in, you know, steering us in the direction with granting programs and things like that? I know that there's some RALP programs that have recently been announced. So, you know, what direction is the government taking us in?
Yes, we're into a fairly aggressive period right now with the Sustainable Canadian Ag Partnership, and it has all sorts of monies going towards activities around, you know, carbon sequestration. You know, that's the RALP program, the Resilient Ag Landscape Program. And then also under the, you know, the regular SCAP monies that are administered by OSCIA. And, you know, there's a whole list of activities. And in fact, you know, there's so many activities and it's such an aggressive schedule that there's different calls open at different points of time. Mm-hmm. So I would say, you know, the signals are there in terms of where the province is spending. And those are all FedProv, so frankly, the federal government as well. You know, you already mentioned the Living Labs, right? You know, so this is spending coming from the federal government too. And so I guess, you know, I'm going to back up and give a caution. And my caution is that I'm an observer of sustainability things. I work as a subject matter expert. And I guess what I would caution people to say, and this is sort of my obligation as a civil servant, is to not confuse the technical advice I give with some kind of, you know, provincial vision in a particular direction. You know, that comes from Parliament. So for example, you know, back in the old days when I did nutrition work, if I give someone, you know, good advice on copper levels in sheep diets, that does not mean that that's a provincial edict from the Crown, right? That's advice I give in my best conscience as a nutritionist who works for the Crown, right? So this is, I guess, a subtle difference between the advice I can give a livestock sector and, you know, where does the government see itself going with sustainability? I would argue that generally speaking, government would say that sustainability needs to be industry-led. There are clear roles for government, right? There are clear roles around government in terms of, you know, these funding programs or helping create incentives for the industry to move the direction it wants. But it's not going to be government telling industry, this is what sustainability looks like, you got to do it. That's just not going to happen.
Okay, so the government's not setting sort of high-level targets for, you know, carbon neutral or...
Oh, they would very well set those sort of targets when, you know, when the timing is right on those sorts of things. And I mean, you know, the country signing on to things like climate agreements gives that. But how that expresses itself in farming and how that might look, say, to the sheep industry, there's many layers of lack of continuity between those things, right? Like that's still sort of for the industry to figure out.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, if I was, you know, from a sustainability lens, if I was trying to pick the trajectory I would see for the sheep industry in Ontario, despite what I said about hiding in the shadows, you know, of the dairy industry and the beef industry, like the things to me that the sheep industry struggles with, and people who attend sheep meetings know this to be true. I think we have labor challenges in the sheep industry. I think we have a wool challenge, you know, despite what I said, you know, about the campaign for wool. I mean, we still have this fundamental issue where, you know, the production of wool and the management of wool relative to what it costs, you know, for shearing, et cetera, and then how the market values wool. I think we have a challenge there too. And I would not be surprised. I mean, people will have seen this already in my trajectory when I was still doing nutrition work. I have opined for some time about the rise of hair sheep in this industry, in Ontario specifically. And I know it's a challenge because there's strong biases against hair sheep, you know, the perception that they're of lesser quality. Or when I say hair sheep, I mean also shedding sheep and these sorts of things. Anyway, there's this perception that they're of lesser quality. Because I think the European approach to sheep has been that they've been wool breeds all along. I think we're going to be challenged by that for both labor reasons and others, right? And I think resource use reasons. I think that's going to be a change our industry is going to have to make probably in the next 10 to 20 years. And I see this other intersection, you know, with our consumers, because so much of our product is going to be going into a halal market. I think we're going to have keep a strong eye around these questions around what does slaughter look like for these different markets? Because I think we risk ourselves the concern of having a welfare liability there if we don't have that all on board. So those are the two things I see going forward that, you know, could be hot spots or opportunities for the industry. You know, this question about, you know, do we have the right genetics in place to do what this industry needs to do? And do we have the right processing facilities in place for what our consumers need us to do?
Yep. All really great questions about the future of our industry. Absolutely. Thanks, Christoph. Lots to think about. Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for joining us on Flock Talk today.
You're very welcome. Good luck think about that. I'm sorry if I was too philosophical, but this is kind of what I do.
Yeah. No, it's a great way to end the podcast with lots to think about.
Absolutely.
Hey, Stacey, what's new at Ontario Sheep Farmers?
One event we would really like to feature is Field Day 2025. That's going to be hosted by Ontario Sheep Farmers and large flock operators. This is an event that's going to be open to commercial sheep farmers and those aspiring to be. It will be held on July 24th at Orono Fairgrounds. Stay tuned for more details on that and pop back into ontariosheep.org/events to see the latest updates for that event. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode of Flock Talk, please subscribe through your podcast app to receive alerts for our future episodes. And please share our podcast with your friends.
And for more Ontario Sheep Farmers content, follow us on social media at Ontario Sheep Farmers on Instagram and Facebook, at Ontario Sheep on X, and visit our website at ontariosheep.org. Thanks for listening.